Nobody thought this virus would spread so fast. I felt very lucky to be back in the UAE thinking I'm in a safe place and then here nothing is going to happen. And when suddenly things started going sour, it was like watching a movie.
Hi, I'm Chirag Desai, and you're listening to Tales of the Trade from Amaya Media, a show about our local entrepreneurs and the stories not just behind their companies, but also the communities they've brought to life. On our season finale today, we're talking to the founder of one of our partner companies, Tatiana Antonelli from Gumbuk. They're the region's leading social enterprise, helping promote sustainable practices since 2010, which means had the year turned out slightly differently, we'd have been celebrating their milestone 10th anniversary this year. Tatiana also hosts Forward Talks, which is a podcast we produce with them, to help grow awareness about businesses and initiatives available in the region that can make our life and our companies a lot more sustainable. So I sat down with her a few weeks ago, just as we were in the middle of the pandemic here in Dubai, and as much as it was, and still is, a tough time for many businesses around the globe, Tatiana believes that there is a remarkable opportunity in this for entrepreneurs. So let's rewind to February 2020, a few weeks before Dubai instituted an evening curfew to limit the spread of the coronavirus.
Every day when we were going to the office, we were looking at each other and the question was like, are we doing the right thing being in the office? On top of that, we work in a co-working space. So this means that we don't have a fixed desk, which is ours, and we clean it and we make sure it's sanitized. And so the first measure after a few days was, you know what? Let's go home. Let's work from home. And that was a big step because we all had to adapt to working from home. You also have to think that we're a team of women and we're all moms. So the fact that we were working from home for us was quite challenging because we had, you know, to deal with children and the same reason why you want to be in an office, because it helps you to concentrate and be more independent for a few hours at least during the day. Being back home, you have to deal with everything else. And then we had the homeschooling. And again, from a business point of view, what can you tell your employees when they say, I can't do this. I don't have the time anymore, or I cannot deliver what is expected from me because suddenly I have this whole load on top. But somehow it put us in as a real team trying to face the issues, or how we could work together. We changed the timing, so instead of concentrating our efforts in the mornings would be for the family, and everyone then would work more in the afternoon. It was frustrating. I could see from their faces online how each lady in the team were struggling in different ways. And then two of them actually left. They took repatriation flights and went back to Europe. So, and also all our programs which are very physical. I mean, we do tree planting, we do awareness sessions, we go into schools and offices, we do team building. All that stopped. And so now from a proper business point of view, we also had to reinvent how we would, be relevant. So we looked at, of course, launching our newsletter. So in 10 years of Gumbuk, we never had a newsletter.
Right.
And this was the perfect moment to launch it. And we made sure it was a personal one, trying really to reach our stakeholders, companies and people we've been working for a long time. So it was not commercial. I think also there was this aspect during COVID and the lockdown of, let's go back to community. Let's go and talk to the community and let's forget about business somehow. Like now this is the moment to help each other. What can we do to help business who are struggling, the community, people who are locked, don't have food? So it somehow took a very unreal dimension where we started thinking more about the others rather than ourselves. And I think the first months were really about making a difference for the community. And then we had to realize that, oof, things are really tough. It's not going away. There's no money coming in. So as a team, we decided to know, you know, to go into a part-time mode to lower the salaries. Also, being a social enterprise, we never had, you know, in 10 years, that mentality of putting cash aside, or profit aside for the business. It was really, okay, we have this money and we need to reinvest it for a new project, a new campaign, or growing the team very organically. So this has been a learning curve. And somehow we realize this cannot happen in the future again. We need to look at other possible crises where you need to make sure you have enough to survive at least 6 months as a business.
Tell me about the newsletter, by the way, because I know you guys obviously shifted to almost a weekly schedule with the newsletter as well. What has the response been to that?
Incredible. Because of course, we had to do it in-house, you know, so it was something new to do. Everyone in the team was engaged. Everyone has a responsibility and a topic. Of course, within the team, we have different experiences and different,
like skill sets.
Skill sets. Thank you so much. And so we had, for example, Caroline. Her focus and main interests are the Sustainable Development Goals. And therefore, she concentrated on that. And every week, she would produce an article about a sustainable goal. And she would relate that goal to local companies and local initiatives, which is also very important because somehow these topics can seem quite, you know, abstract. And if you don't relate them and connect them to a reality, specifically a local reality, then the risk is that people are not going to be interested. So she did that. And of course, we have in the team Siobhan Layden. Siobhan is an expert reporter and journalist. She had her own show on Dubai Eye for many years. So having her really helped structure the every week the topic and how we would develop it, who we would be interviewing. And then every week there was a main subject. So it would be, for example, local businesses, so going local, and we would interview all local social enterprises and green businesses or sustainable businesses in the UAE to understand why they were doing that, what was the journey behind it, what was the struggle during COVID, and how then the community could support them. Another one we did was food security. So we interviewed all the farms here, but specifically hydroponics, vertical farming, indoor farming, also to talk about an issue that was quite pressing during COVID. Is like, are we going to be able to feed everyone in the UAE? And everyone realized suddenly, ooh, what happens is that we can't fly anything anymore. Yeah. What are we going to do? So that was really interesting. And not only the government was, you know, leading a lot of interesting conversations, but you had all the different stakeholders and the farmers. So that was really good. We also spoke about water, energy. Another, in a few months, we've seen this huge boom on hydrogen. I mean, 4 months ago, you would ask someone, what do you think about hydrogen, specifically in the region? Oh, it's never going to happen. It's impossible. And, you know, they announced that in Saudi, they've just invested millions of dollars for the biggest hydrogen plant in the world for NEOM. So it's fascinating. And I think we were able to keep our audience quite entertained, and we received a lot of emails thanking us for the newsletter. While I personally sometimes I just delete them because I feel I receive too many newsletters, and when I open them, they just give me raw information without any context. So this is why we really made sure we would give a proper introduction to the subject, explain why we were talking about that, what was the relevance, you know, to the region, which is another aspect that is rare to find, is why should I care being here in Dubai or in the UAE or in the region? So no, yes, it was a great exercise, and it had a great result. So we're very happy.
It's interesting when we talk about newsletters. I was having a conversation with somebody maybe 2 or 3 months ago, kind of brainstorming with him to understand, you know, what it was. And I had the same reaction, right? I was like, I receive like 4 newsletters a day, 5. And I was like, well, why should I do more? Because I'm just going to clutter somebody's inbox again. And I think it's interesting to learn over the course of time that we have increased the frequency of our newsletters as well. It was something we were starting to do anyway pre-COVID, but then COVID kind of made that sort of, again, accelerated that for us. And we're seeing continuously increased engagement across the newsletter, right? So I think if they're done right, they can be extremely powerful. I think one of the biggest things about the newsletters was owning your audience, right? So when you look at your other platforms, whether you look at any social media, there's still that layer between you and the and your final audience, whereas the newsletter tends to be a very direct way to message somebody. So as long as you keep them engaged, there's actually a lot of value there, but it's not the easiest nut to crack. But this person was actually telling me, he's like, sometimes we send 2 newsletters a day.
Wow.
And I remember the first, after we upped our newsletter, the first, I think, 2 or 3 weeks, we saw a lot of unsubscribes. Or not a lot, but like we saw a few. And I just told myself, I'm like, you know what, it's fine. I mean, if the person doesn't enjoy me communicating with them, it's probably best that they're not on the list anyway. But after that initial churn, we started seeing like a real increase. So we get more opens, we get more responses, we get more clicks even.
Oh, no, totally. And I think, yeah, we had the same thing when you see people unsubscribing, it's like, no, why? What did I do wrong? Mm-hmm. And honestly, even if only one person reads the newsletter, it makes a difference to that person. So, of course, the aim is to have a broader database of interested people. But yes, after that, what we noticed that people started sharing the newsletter their friends. And then we received even personal emails from government entities interested in what we were doing. And that was really, really a nice surprise. Now, the big question from a business point of view is, should we make this newsletter commercial? Should we start adding, you know, a promotion, a deal?
Yeah, sponsorships even, maybe something. Yeah.
But I'm very scared about that because I'm scared that then the people are going to say, oh, here we are. They're going to, you know, try to sell me something again. So this is a bit of a difficult question.
But I think it's an interesting time because I think people will be more forgiving today than they would have ever been. 6 months ago, if you'd had a very engaged newsletter and you said, all right, well, you know, I'm getting so much out of this, I'm going to see if I can find a sponsor to kind of fund it. I mean, and completely legitimate to do that, by the way, right? I think there are valid business reasons to do that. I feel like people will be a lot more forgiving today because I think they would understand that it's being done to maintain the longevity of a business. And you have to look at every avenue possible at this point, right? Like you don't have this choice anymore.
You also need to, you know, associate to the right sponsor,
correct,
sharing the same values. This is what we're going to have to really work on, is to align ourselves with companies we really trust and like and share values with.
Yeah, and that trust will then go back to your audience, right? They know that when you're partnering with someone, you haven't gotten associated with something that doesn't define who you are, especially considering your company is based on some very defined ideals, right? In terms of what you guys want to stand for.
Definitely. Yeah. No, it's true.
When we come back, how Gombook is reorienting post-COVID, and more about why Tatiana believes there is a tremendous opportunity brewing for entrepreneurs, right after this short break.
Hi, I'm Courtney Brandt, and I'm happy to share that a new season of CSR of One, a podcast and social initiative, is live in your favorite podcast player. On each episode, we talk to individuals who are putting their weight behind philanthropic initiatives outside of their chosen careers. From responding to the demands of the community during COVID-19 to realizing a sustainable dream, our guests are truly inspiring. You can find the third season of CSR of One in your favorite podcast players, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and even streaming apps like Spotify and Anghami. And we'd love it if you gave us a review on Apple Podcasts or IMDb for the episode or episodes you enjoyed the most. We can't wait to share these inspirational conversations with you and hear your feedback.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tales of the Trade with Tatiana Antonelli, founder of Gumbook. Post-lockdown, as Gumbook started to scale down, with your staff almost working voluntarily by this point, Tatiana was also looking to reinvent how Gumbook went about its primary mission. Now, this is something most businesses have been saying over the last few months. And as you might remember from even our first episode this season with Arva Emmett from Frying Pan Adventures, the question wasn't whether they should reinvent, but more how do they go about reinventing and what? What do you invest in and how much can you invest at a time like this? So for example, how do you take something like planting graph trees, one of Gumbook's most successful programs, and usher it into the digital world?
The tree planting was born to raise awareness about the local environment, the importance of planting indigenous trees. So the aspect that will be taken online will be the awareness through webinars, through online conferences. Maybe we will record these awareness sessions so schools can actually, you know, get the children into their auditorium and have this on the screen, maintaining social distancing and making sure that they're not crowded in the room. We can do the same with corporates and their employees, so they don't have to have a stranger coming in their office, right, if that is not possible. But then I have to say, in the past few weeks, we've been able to go and visit our farmers, and we did a tree planting a couple of weeks ago. It's a matter of getting used to it and taking the right precautions and measures. But I think the awareness can be done online. It's just a matter of getting organized. And another tool that we've been using now and for more than a year is a podcast series that we have. And that was very, very powerful as well. Our listeners have been, you know, going up because, of course, you're at home and maybe you've seen all movies and maybe you're also tired of the screen time. And so it's good maybe to, you know, start lying down, listening to an interview that is not going to ask you to actually be again on a screen, which I felt was quite overwhelming after a few weeks of having everyone in the house on a screen to do, you know, children and us parents working. And then, you know, oh, let's watch a movie. It's always on a screen.
There's no break in the activity at all. Yeah.
It's quite alienating. So we thought that the podcast was actually a great way to be different and to allow people to have a different kind of entertainment while still learning. And then hopefully, let's see, all our other campaigns are available on our websites. They are online. We can work on webinars and we'll see. But we need to be ready and get organized, I think. It's just that.
The thing that I'm finding when I'm talking to people, of course, is, and I think many people are in the same state where we haven't really figured out what the solution is yet, right? So some people are hoping that you can just get by until a certain date. And then you've seen some who've taken a very hard line to be like, I'm just junking everything. I'm going to just start charging for everything I do online, right? Like, it's kind of those two extremes. How have you looked at this to say, I mean, at the end of the day, of course, all of us want our businesses to run forever. And so how do you then set up or set yourself up for something that can last beyond, let's say, what you have run rate to today?
$1 million question. I think, to be honest, so far, what I've realized is that in the past years, I've grown a lot the team, investing in, you know, skills and human capital, because things were going well. And so we could, you know, have more people in the team. But somehow this is not going to be possible. What I'm thinking is to not hire anymore as a full-time, but work more on project base. So this will allow Gumbook to be sustainable financially, in the sense that there's a project, it's being paid for either by a sponsorship or, you know, by other means, but you have an income for that project, so you hire for that, which is very dangerous because somehow, you know, I might lose some of the amazing team members because they are looking for a full-time job with a regular salary. But it's also true that right now I need to make sure that Goombook survives. And that's the priority. If Goombook doesn't survive, then we're all gone until things become normal again. It's going to be on based on project. Yeah, that's it.
Because this is an added avenue that someone has to consider, because there are costs associated with doing things in a more sustainable way, ideally what they should have done is it should have accelerated companies' view to say, man, we can't not be sustainable anymore. Whereas the reality, because of the economic impacts all of this has had, might mean that they can't necessarily take that step or may not take that step depending on how they look at it. Where do you see this falling in terms of what you've seen with the companies you work with?
It's a very good question. I think we've seen different things happening. And again, it all depends on the core values of each company. So if sustainability is really embedded in your strategy, but also in the way you produce or you work or you interact with your stakeholders, then I think the interest is still there. Maybe now the priorities are shifting because we are dealing with a social problem, which is, you know, people are dying, people are sick. How do we protect our employees? How do we make sure that the offices are clean? So right now there's a shift, but that's not away or against sustainability. It's part of sustainability. Sustainability is society, environment, and economy. Yeah. So we need to make sure that these three things work. We need to make sure that businesses are sustainable, that, you know, they can still stay afloat, higher pay salaries, but of course then maintain a healthy environment. The huge work that has been done by so many organizations around the world to fight single-use plastic, the first months we all felt like, no, 10 years. And now we have thousands of masks down the drain every day. But again, this is where our work is. It's a new, you know, challenge, and we need to start again. Awareness, make sure you don't litter these masks, make sure you dispose of them properly. Do you know what are they made of? Because some people, again, don't have the information. We always need to go back to education and awareness and make sure we all have the right data to take, you know, responsible choices. So now we need to push to reusable mask, making sure that we wash them and we don't use the ones that are made out of plastic. I think also at the beginning it was quite crazy because the World Health Organization was saying yes, mask, no mask, again, yes,
there
mask.
There was a lot of uncertainty around everything, right?
So again, you know, it's hard for individuals, for companies to understand what do they need to do? What is the best thing to do? Now we're reaching a point where I think the ideas are a bit more clear. And we know that reusable masks, if done properly, are perfectly viable. Now, from companies being sustainable, again, we've seen large entities such as BlackRock, the investment firm, biggest one in the world, suddenly announcing their sustainability strategy. So this was really like, okay, they understand that now is the moment to invest in the environment or in companies that are not going to harm the environment in sustainable options. That is great. There's been a huge push on, you know, food security, water security. We've realized through this crisis that the time is now. It depends also on governments. If governments start, you know, pushing for reduction of waste and taxation, if you waste, you need to pay taxes. These are the measures that that help.
Yeah. Yeah, you often talk about the carrot and stick approach, and you're like, enough carrot, let's get some stick involved, right? So I think that this is now more than ever, I suppose, yeah.
It's a joint effort. So at the end of the day, this needs to be a you know, private sector and public sector together, understanding what needs to be done. Of course, the private sector is going to need help from governments. Sure. But the same way, they can help the government take the right decision based on their needs. So it's fundamental that we look now more into partnerships the PPPs. It's really important. The Agenda 2030 is there also to help, you know, not only countries but companies and individuals understand what we need to do. And the Sustainable Development Goals are not just, you know, cute, colorful squares to add to our websites. These are things that they're guidelines and frameworks that will help us. And I believe that, for example, just looking at the UAE, this country wants to be a hub for, you know, trade and new businesses. If you ask all new businesses or existing businesses to renew their licenses by, you know, telling them, asking them to report on the SDGs, this would be already amazing. And it would guarantee that we are moving towards the right direction. This is just a suggestion.
As an entrepreneur, if you had to give one advice to an entrepreneur out there who is kind of just still trying to figure out what to do or feel motivated that there's something to look forward to, what would you tell them?
Well, I think, as I said just now, this is a very exciting moment because things are changing. And I think the role of entrepreneurs is to fill the gap where there's a need. And right now, there's going to be a lot of new needs. And if you feel you found a solution, a product, then it's fantastic. And that's the exciting part. And I believe right now there's a lot of interest from different, you know, accelerators and incubators and investors, angel investors, into these new solutions that are going to change the world. So it's the right moment. So if an entrepreneur is looking at a new technology or, you know, something innovative, then now is the moment. Don't be shy. Go for it. It's, feel the need. And every time we've interviewed people on Forward Talks, the main thread is always that. They felt there was something lacking or they wanted to fill a gap. And so that's what I look at Karim, you know?
Yeah. You can find out more about Gombok by visiting their website or following them on Instagram or LinkedIn, where they continue to share a wealth of information about what's impacting our planet. You can also find Forward Talks in all of your podcast players. There's links to all of this in our show notes. We've also got a short bonus episode with Tatiana that will be out next week, and we hope to be back with a new season in early 2021. Thank you very much for joining us on this season of Tales of the Trade, produced by me, Chirag Desai, with the support of Pooja Sagar, Abhishek Venkata Subramanian, and Zainab Ujjaini. Tales of the Trade is part of the Amaya Media Network. You can find out more at amaya.media or just search for Amaya in your favorite podcast player to find out about our shows.